Okay. So we are in chapter
3
of Bhagavad Gita.
Finishing verses,
yes. So in the previous class, we completed up to 34.
35
also we did?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
We did 35 as well. So anyone remembers anything? In the previous class?
We have to do our physical activities because others follow the physical activities of us.
You have to keep the children quiet. I can still hear some murmuring. I'm not even able to hear what he says.
So,
sorry, Prabhu, can you come again?
Yeah, we all have to do our prescribed duties without expecting the fruit of it and in Krishna consciousness. We can't run away from doing the prescribed duties. All great men have done the prescribed duties. Example of King Janaka has also been provided. And even the Lord, even though he does not require the duties to be performed, still does all the prescribed duties in order to establish the dharma.
Beautiful. Yeah. Very nice recap. Thank you. Any other points?
Yoga ladder. Discuss about the yoga ladder.
We discuss the yoga ladder.
From Mahima life to Karma Kanda.
Yeah.
And then to Akama Karma and Nishkama Karma, and from there progressing to Akama Karma.
What is the difference between animal life and Sakama Karma? What's the difference between animal life and Sakama Karma?
Regulated sense gratification.
Correct. Unregulated sense gratification to regulated sense gratification. So sense gratification is the common thread between What's the difference between unregulated sense gratification, animal life and karma kanda? So yeah, animal life and karma kanda. Karma kanda is regulated sense gratification and animal life is unregulated gratification. In both the cases, what is another thing that is common? In karma kanda and unregulated and animal life, so let me go from the lowest ladder. From animal life to karma kanda, what is common to both?
Sense
gratification. And what else is common to both?
Attachment.
Attachment, yes. The goal is not Krishna. That is common to both. In either cases, the goal is not Krishna. The goal of karma kanda is also not Krishna. The goal of animal life is also, those people also not, they don't aim at Krishna, right? Then what happens? When you climb the third ladder, that's the time there is some connection that happens with Krishna. That's why the word yoga appears at that level, in the third ladder. In animal life, the word doesn't lie. There's nothing like animal life yoga. There's nothing like karma kanda yoga, right? It starts only in sakama karma yoga. So that's the first time, that's the first appearance of yoga. Just like, you know, the sun is rising, there's dawn. It's not risen fully, but still you can perceive the sunlight in the morning, right? There's that hue in the sky. So slowly it's rising. So that's the start of enlightenment, beginning of enlightenment. Sakama karma yoga. So sakama karma yoga, what happens in sakama karma yoga? So sakama karma yoga means that one leg is in Krishna consciousness and another leg is in material life. Has anyone experienced that in this room? Join the club. Okay. So all of us are like that. However, most of us, though we are in that ladder, still some people, in that ladder itself there is a gradation. Some people are still higher up in that ladder, some people have just started climbing that ladder, right? So the percentage is different. Some people may be 10% Sakama, 90% Krishna. Some people may be 10% Krishna, 90% Sakama. Example of 10% Krishna, 90% Sakama. Person starts coming to the temple. And then the person wants to realize his or her own aspirations using the temple. It's possible. Many people come to the temple, but they come to fulfill their own agenda in the temple. There is some bhakti. At least they are not fulfilling their agenda in a pub. They are coming to the temple, which is glorious. At least they are not going to a demigod temple to fulfill their agenda. They are coming to Krishna's temple, but still they are fulfilling their agenda. 90% of the time, they are thinking about how I can become more popular in the congregation, how I can... Sometimes the newcomers also come, and because devotees are humble, devotees are easy to dominate in that one sense, isn't it? So devotees allow others. Oh, you want to take the credit? Yeah, you go ahead and take the credit. So it's a very easy environment for a person to come and start dominating the association of devotees, right? After some time, the person starts realizing, why is everyone, you know, so I'm the only one dominating. Then he realizes something is wrong with me only. Because no one else wants to do that. Then he starts asking questions. Is there something wrong with me, Prabhu? Oh yeah, yeah, welcome. Let's do some service. Go and wash pots. Then the person starts gradually observing other devotees and starts learning. So from 10%, then the devotee is now gradually moving upwards and upwards. And what's happening is association is also happening, and more importantly, what's happening? Hearing is happening. So if hearing is not happening enough, if association is not happening enough, then the person takes a long time to move from the 10% bhakti to whatever bhakti that he, you know, that one should move ideally. The rate is decided by the quality of association and hearing that one is taking. Many times, there are devotees who are in the association of devotees but not associating with devotees. We will find that also. In a congregation, you will find. Am I clear or no? Devotees who are in the association, amongst the association of devotees, but not associating with devotees. So you will find that these people will come to the temple every week. They will be there every week, okay? But remain aloof, right? They may or may not attend lectures. Usually they will not attend. More often than not, they will not attend. They will come themselves, or they will bring their children along to the temple. Stay aloof, not socialize, not move around with any devotees. Rarely ask, is there any service for me in this temple? Never they will ask. They will come and then they will drive off after they finish that. Okay. Some people are too attached to their children. In the neophyte stages also, that is another thing. Too much attachment to me and my family. So their whole goal, some people may come to the temple with an agenda, how can I promote my children here in this temple? Right? So they may not be attending any lectures. They may not be doing any seva. They may not be taking association of any devotees. Just other than just saying, Hari Bol Prabhu, that's all. Full stop. Generally as an etiquette, Hari Bol. So very nice etiquette, nice warm personality like that. But the agenda is what? Something, okay, we want to give our children some culture, right? Or my children have some talents, how can I show it to an audience which is very humble and who will appreciate very easily? Because devotees appreciate very easily. Even if the khichdi is cooked, without salt, devotees will say, Hari Bol Jai Prabhu! At least Prabhu, you are cooking khichdi. In the hotel, if khichdi is cooked without salt, will you say, Jai, at least this hotel is, you know, cooking khichdi. Will you say like that? No. In the outside world, nobody is going to accept such things. So devotee association is a nice breeding ground also. But it is okay. At least these devotees are still glorious. They are coming to the temple with their vested interests. But gradually, what will happen is, some saint will come along one day. They may not recognize any of us sitting in this room. But if Bhurijan Prabhu walks in, or Devamrita Swami walks in, then they will look up, and maybe occasionally once they will come and hear. Some devotees don't even do that. Even when these senior personalities are there, they don't come to here. They have their own agenda, again in the temple. They may prefer to sit in the courtyard, rather than come and hear that, no, Bhurijan Prabhu has come, at least come inside and hear from him. He doesn't come here very often. So a devotee takes own time to move in this graph, from 10 to, that a devotee should move into. So the two important characteristics are association and hearing. Of course, the devotees whom I am talking about right now are in the association of devotees, but not associating. Those are the examples that I give. They are really not getting into it. Not really committing to association with devotees. Because the risk is, when you come inside and commit to associating with devotees, then you are likely to have friction, right? You are likely to be in a situation where you have to subordinate, and nobody wants to subordinate, right? As long as I am fulfilling my agenda in the temple and everyone else is very nice with me and I don't have to subordinate to anyone, then I am liking to come to the temple. The moment someone tells me, Prabhuji, I think you must... Sorry? What did you tell me just now? Don't touch me. Don't tell me anything. I know what I am supposed to do. So therefore, this fear is also there. That more I come into the inner circle of devotees, there may be someone who may be more senior than me, because I am used to thinking that I am the senior most wherever I go. When I go to office, everyone respects me. So then when I come to temple also, you know, the same seniority should be there. People should respect my qualification. After all, I have studied in, you know, Melbourne University. Right? So we carry all our mentality and try to fulfill the aspirations. You know, the same mentality we carry here. And therefore, as a result, we don't progress. We don't progress as much. Right? So we are in the association of devotees, but not associating. So actually, associating means devotees, means subordinating to a person who is more spiritually realized than us, letting little bit of our free will go away, not holding on to our free will, letting other devotees tell us what is good for our spiritual life, and in return for that service of devotees, actually returning the favor of guidance. In that sense, I shouldn't use the word favor, but thinking that way. The devotees are very merciful on me, therefore how can I serve them in return for the instructions that they are giving me and for the interest they are taking in my spiritual life. So that is an interaction. So gradually that happens. If one gives a chance to oneself to do that, then one easily gets into the congregation and progresses very fast. But till the time, then one will always be on the sideline for many years. So it's important to get into the congregation, accept somebody at least as an authority. Other than, in fact, some people come, they still accept authority. But that authority has to be someone very big and famous. I will accept authority only of, let's take an example. Which Maharaj should I say? Which Maharaj doesn't come to Melbourne? Okay, I will accept authority only of Radhanath Swami Maharaj. I will not accept authority of anybody else. I respect Maharaj. Maharaj knows me. That's it. I don't care how each of you feel. I have to serve Maharaj, and if in service of Maharaj, I have to ride over 10-15 people in Melbourne Pahapuru Mandir, please understand I am in devotional service. And I am trying to serve Maharaj. You know, something like that. This mentality is also there. So we carry the mentality of dominating over others, controlling others, projecting ourselves in the front, right? But everything is fine because the mind is justifying that after all I am serving Maharaj. Guru Maharaj, I'm sorry, like that. So a devotee goes through the 10% to the 90%. So most of our struggles are something like this, right? And then finally a devotee may reach a state where the devotee gradually moves from the Sakama platform to the Nishkama platform, where the devotee is not too much in the mode of passion. He has given away his mode of passion. Now he is not interested in a result-oriented activity, right? The service itself is very pleasing to the devotee. So because the activity is not oriented towards producing results, the anxiety is less. Because anxiety is less, friction is less and relationships are better in any activity, right? So the devotee renounces the attachment to the fruits of the results. And then he moves to the Nishkama platform. Now, but the activity itself is now resulting in an attachment to the devotee. Therefore, when that activity is challenged, taken away from that devotee and given to another devotee, there is immediately friction. A friction again surfaces at the Nishkama level also. But I have been doing this service in so many years. I thought I should be the one who should continue like that. This was my seva all these years. For example, sweeping the courtyard was my seva. How dare now you are doing it like that? Or, I know how to do it, you have to do it my way. If it's not done the way that I do it, then I am not in this game. Like that. So here, the attachment is not to the results, but there is an attachment to the activity and the way that activity should be done. So, but the tendency is the same, to exercise my authority and control. The same tendency is manifesting in different ways. It's manifesting in the results, it's manifesting at the activity level. So at the Nishkama platform, then the devotee is attached to the activity, not to the results. And then, finally, a devotee transcends that and goes to the Akama platform. Akama platform, there is no attachment to the activity, there is no attachment to the result of the activity. There is only one attachment now, to the lotus feet of Guru and Krishna. Let you give me any activity. Today you may tell me preaching service. Tomorrow you tell me go and preach in Pakistan. Day after tomorrow you tell me that you sweep the courtyard. Right? For 6 months you put me in pot service. Right? And then you put me in toilet service. And again from there you tell me you give Bhagavatam class in the temple. No problem. Anything is okay. Because at the end of the day, I am sold to, my only goal is to serve the Vaishnavas, the senior devotees. So I don't mind that they decide what is the best seva for me. When we reach that platform, then we are completely surrendering our free will, false ego, everything to the instructions of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. And then one moves to the next rung of the yoga ladder. So Lord Krishna has explained all that in the previous class. And we were at verse number 36. Arjuna said, O descendant of Vrishni, by what is one impelled to sinful acts, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force? Damuguru.
The living entity as part and parcel of the Supreme is originally spiritual, pure, and free from all material contaminations. Therefore, by nature, he is not subject to the sins of the material world. But when he is in contact with the material nature, he acts in many sinful ways without hesitation and sometimes even against his will. As such, Arjuna's question to Krishna is very sanguine as to the perverted nature of the living entities. Although the living entity sometimes does not want to act in sin, he is still forced to act. Sinful actions are not, however, impelled by the super soul within, but are due to another cause, as the Lord explains in the next verse.
What are the points, sir?
The soul is originally pure and blissful, but when it comes in contact with the material world, it gets contaminated and do some sinful actions.
Says that super soul is not responsible for any sinful acts that are being performed. Because I would like to add one comment. I think in one lecture I heard, there was one guilty person who was being prosecuted, and he was asked who, he was like a big murderer or something, he was who, why did you do all this? And he said, God asked me to do it from within. I heard it from in some lecture. So this is like the answer for that. Krishna is saying, no, super soul is not responsible for your sinful acts. Your self are responsible.
So he can be hanged. God asked me from within my heart to hang him. Yeah. Sometimes we justify it. Anything else?
The material modes impel the soul to act in a way against his own free will.
How many of you have read the section? How many have read the section before coming to class? Some people have. Okay. Alright, anything else? No? So let's first understand the context in which this whole thing is coming. So go back to text 34 in your book. What is Lord talking about in text 34?
There are principles to regulate
attachment and avoid raga and dvesh. Most of the material world is revolving around raga and dvesh. We like something and we loathe certain things. Attachment and aversion. All our decision making activities in life, many of that is influenced by what we like and what we don't like. Our friendships are also based on that. That I don't like associating with this Prabhu, but I have a lot of affection for this Prabhu. Similarly, Mataji is like that.
So, everything is about attachment and aversion. So, there are principles to regulate this attachment and aversion.
So, the word used is what?
Regulate.
So, Lord is giving ladder slowly. He is not saying one should not be attached and one should not be aversion. He is saying regulate it. Giving a very practical approach. There are principles to regulate attachment and aversion. And those are that's why Prabhupada called it as regulative principles. Four regulative principles. There are principles to regulate attachment and aversion pertaining to the senses and their objects. One should not come under the control of such attachment and aversion. The soul should not come under the control of attachment and aversion because they are stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. They are stumbling blocks. So Lord has said that in 34. So there are 3 points that Urjan Prabhu mentions in his book Surrender Unto Me. What does he say? He says that our senses are attracted to several pleasures. Topmost pleasure for the senses is what? Sex desire. Topmost pleasure. So our senses are attracted to pleasures, especially sex desire and all those desires that money can afford. These are the 2 things that keeps the whole world moving. Lord Rishabhdev, what did he say? Pumsa sthriya mithuni bhavam evam taror eva hridaya ganti rahu ato sutapta vittaya agra kshetra sutapta vittaya janasya mohoyam aham mamindi. So this whole world, Lord Rishabhdev is saying, in which canto was it?
Fifth canto.
In 5th canto, Lord Rishabhdev's teachings. He is saying that this whole world is moving around sex desire. Everyone is working very hard. The men are working very hard to attract the opposite sex. The women are also working hard, okay, to grow up the corporate ladder, or again, you know, so that they can also enjoy with their opposite sex, like that. Whole world, every activity is roaming around this one focus. No? How can I increase my bodily enjoyment with the opposite sex? In a subtle way or in a gross way? In a subtle way also. So this attraction is very powerful. And also, how can I give pleasure to my senses through the wealth that I have accumulated? That's why we go to, you know, spend hours in Maya's, or what is that, Chadstone shopping center, like that. Just go, window shopping, that's all. Let's relax one day. The idea of relaxation is what? Let's go to Chadstone. What do we want to buy? We don't want to buy anything, but just let's go. At least seeing there is no problem. And then today it will be mentioned. What happens when we go for seeing? Dhyayato vishayankum. How do we start contemplating on those things? And then desires arise. So the senses are automatically attached to sex and to everything that money can buy. The senses are simultaneously repulsed by austerity. Oh my God, tomorrow is Ekadashi, yeah? At least I respond like that. I'm sure all of you don't respond like that. But for a person like me, sometimes, oh, tomorrow is Ekadashi, oh my God. So, no. Previous night, at least, no, even if you are not hungry, take some parsan. Like that. What is the parsan you call it? Savories.
Namkeen.
Yeah, namkeen. And fill it such a way that day.
At 11:45.
Yeah? 11:45. Yeah, 11:45. So the senses are repulsed by holy places, fasting, obeying someone. These things senses repulse. But sex desire and money, ability to buy, senses are attracted. This is how we are. So the shastras, so there is, on one hand there is attachment, rag. On the other hand there is dvesh, attachment to sense gratification. And then there is aversion to things which inhibit our continued sense gratification. So the shastra therefore is recommending, Lord Krishna is recommending here, that one has to perform one's prescribed duty in Krishna consciousness to overcome this rag and dvesh. And one has to regulate one's life. So that is why this Ekadashi is given. Especially for people like me, you know, who have too much attachment to grains and sweets. Right? So one day Ekadashi is given. Even sometimes I tell Yamanalila also, make Ekadashi sweet on that. So still that attachment is not going, but at least there is some level of control is there. Automatically in 15 days you are, you know, you are eating apple in office and carrying banana instead of, you know, something else. So there is some control that we are having. And we will see more of that control as we go along today, and why those controls and balances are very important. And more so over in Grihastha life. We will see that. So, yeah.
When you mentioned that the first point, senses are attached to several pleasures on gross and subtle level. What do you mean by subtle level?
Subtle level means, for example, I am not attached to furniture. I am not attached to car. I live simply in a one bedroom, right? But please, all devotees, respect me for that. Acknowledge me. See how humbly I am living. So please take me as an example, all of you. So we want to be. So His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj once said, the desire is to. We become proud of our humility. So we want to be acknowledged for being very renounced and detached. So that is a subtle desire. It's not gross, but it's subtle. It's inside the mind. Sorry, you had?
No.
I want this woman to. This woman is beautiful.
Yeah, that is gross desire. Yeah. But I'm not attached to any woman. And better the congregational acknowledges that. Like that. And therefore the women can develop attraction for a person who is not attracted to them. Oh, how renounced he is, Prabhu. That is called a subtle desire. So these desires are, that's why it's said, see. Lust is subtler than, the most subtle form is lust. We never know when this will attack. Very, very subtle. We'll talk more about it.
Technical question then.
Yeah.
So, do we only get karma for actions or for desire as well? I mean, we don't have control of the mind, that we know when we chant. So,
yeah.
I mean, how are we to be... So, whatever the mind thinks, do we get... Do we accumulate karma for thoughts?
The good part is in Kali Yuga, we don't get karma for anything which is not actioned upon.
Okay.
But sir, that's thanks to Kali Yuga.
Thanks.
However,
thanks for letting us know that.
No, Keshav Prabhu was once telling in the class that if our mind, if there could be some equipment like this, you know, and if we could project everyone's mind, even during japa session in Mangala Arati on television, he says nobody will talk to anyone in this congregation. Nobody will talk to anyone. That is because Kali Yuga. That is how our mind is. So thankfully, in Kali Yuga, there is no offense for mind. But if the thing is kept in the mind without trying to clear it off, then that festers into poison. And then inevitably it reaches a point where the frog will jump out. Like that. Prabhu, like that. It will go there. I've been thinking of telling you many times. Like that. And then he'll say, but that will come out. So it's better to take it out of the mind by taking higher advice, being proactive if something is troubling our heart. And that is why it is mentioned here also. Seeking able guidance when it is troubling our heart. At that stage itself, let the frog come out in front of a senior authority. Dadati prati grihanati guhyam akhyati pruchati. Guhyam akhyati pruchati is very important. Opening our hearts out to someone who we trust in the congregation, that he will give us shastric advice, and not take advantage of and judge us and say, oh, you, how dare you have such thoughts? No, I had a lot of respect for you, Mataji, I had a lot of respect for you, Prabhu. No, not like that. Then that is not proper guidance. A person who will do empathic listening, who will understand what this devotee is undergoing, appreciate that devotee, that I'm happy that you have made it, you opened your heart, and said, not many people have the courage to open up their anarthas. And then lovingly guide that devotee. Sorry, you had a point?
So we think of the Beja Bankutam thing, Papa Beja Bankutam and that thing. So in that we Beja Bankutam also in the...
Correct. Same. That is what Prabhu was saying. Yeah. Yeah. It will lead to that cycle, Papa.
Yeah, but that contributes.
Yeah, that contributes. So there is a problem. Yes, it's a good point that you have touched on. I understand where you're coming from. However, for example, let's take an example. Let's say I cherish this desire, and I was telling in Milpark program also today. I cherish this desire that, you know, I wish I was marrying, you know, Aishwarya Rai, or Miss Universe. You know? I'm not acting on that desire, so I'm not going and murdering her husband, or, you know, running away with her, or trying to molest her. But I have this desire. Oh, Aishwarya Rai. Or maybe, you know, what beautiful lady. How lucky that Abhishek Bachchan. That fellow. Or Aishwarya Rai, or in Western, any heroine is there? Elizabeth Hurley. She is old or young? I don't know much Western heroine, but okay. Some heroine, you say. Hollywood heroine, right? And I am always meditating. Oh, yeah, I wish, I had such association in this lifetime. Now, I am not acting on that, but it is still there as a bijam inside my heart. That desire is there, right? And then, because of the desire and the attachment, I have to take birth again. Prabhupada said, even if you have attachment for one rasagulla, you have to come back into this world, right? So therefore, it is not a good idea to keep those desires inside the heart. Take senior guidance and fulfill it in a regulated manner. If you can overcome it, very good. By proper sadhana, it will go away with a higher taste. But if not, then regulate that desire. Regulated doesn't mean that, you know, go to the same person and say, oh, you are married, I understand, but I want to regulate my desire. No, not like that. Okay. Regulate means then you marry, you know, laudably in a grihastha ashrama. Okay. You look for a wife who is very beautiful, almost like, you know, Aishwarya Rai or whatever, and then, you know, together serve Krishna, so the desire will go away after some time. The lust will transform into love and affection, like that, and respect, like that. So, but it's not a good idea to keep it inside the heart and just leave the body with that, because the mind will then contemplate that only at the time. There will be frustrations and desires which will surface at the time of leaving the body. And then our next body is already getting prepared. You know? In some form like that. So if we have to marry a very beautiful woman, then obviously then we have to either be wealthy or handsome or intelligent. One of these has to be there. Otherwise, why beautiful woman will marry? Correct? So the next body is getting prepared, where I am getting birth, like that. If I have the karma. If I don't have the karma, then that is also not going to happen. Like that. So the laws of karma are very difficult and to understand that way. But largely, it's a general advice that not to keep too many desires just hidden from everyone within the heart, to either discuss it with a senior devotee and get it out of the system. Okay. Or, and then the devotees will advise whether you can conquer that. You are on a platform where you can completely conquer that, or a slower way wherein you can regulate it and get it out of the way. Yes?
Prabhuji, what if they increase the number of rounds then?
Yeah, if we increase the number of rounds, that's a very powerful way of overcoming the desires. That is what the acharyas have said. I have also read that. Yes. Satswarup Das Maharaj, Satswarup Goswami Maharaj, he writes that if you improve the quantity of rounds, then quality of rounds will go up. Many of us have the reverse notion. You know, many times in Bhakti Viksha program, someone tells, no, Prabhu, I am only chanting 4 rounds. When I become very attentive at 4 rounds, then I will go to 5 rounds. Actually, it doesn't work like that. When you go to 19 rounds and 24 rounds, then then Krishna's mercy will come inside. You know, and then he may give you more opportunity to chant attentive rounds. And when we chant attentive rounds, obviously the cleansing process is much faster. Like that. So the desires will go away. Or will be replaced with a higher taste. Someone had a question here? No. So, let's go to text 35 again. We are taking 2 steps back now. Text 35. It is far better to discharge one's prescribed duty, even though faulty, than do another's duties perfectly. Right? Destruction in the course of performing one's own duty is better than engaging in another's duty, for to follow another's path is dangerous. So these 2 verses are given. So there is, on one hand, there is regulation to control rag and dvesh. On the next verse, prescribed duties to be done. So now, having heard these two instructions, one may start thinking that, look, from today onwards, I'm deciding I'll do my prescribed duties and I'll be very regulated in all my activities. Okay, I'll control my rag and dvesh. But experience has said that it is easier said than
done.
Well, that is the problem here. So, because experience has said that it is easier said than done, Arjuna also knows that. That it is easier said than done. Do our prescribed duties, you know, regulate everything, attachment, aversion, etc. But, he says that, but still, even after all these instructions, my mind is still, could flow into Vishaya, like that, to sense gratification. What, I am just an ordinary conditioned soul. Arjuna is now taking the role of an ordinary conditioned soul. Arjuna is actually a very high class devotee. He is in Sakyaras with Krishna. But still he is put in that position as if he were one of the earthly living entities. Like that. So that he is asking this question. So Arjuna is asking a practical question to the Lord, and that is the genesis of 36. Now if you understand 34 and 35, you link understand the link to 36. So Arjuna is asking, O descendant of Rishni, I have heard that you have told me all about prescribed duties and, you know, controlling rag, dvesh, regulating everything. But what if one is impelled to sinful activities, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force? Despite hearing all that, what do I do? Like that. And that is what Lord Krishna is, that is what the purport Rupa is giving here. So, the definition of sin is, in the Sanskrit terminology for sin is what?
Papa.
So how is sin defined? What is the definition of sin? Sin is action which is in contrary to one's prescribed duties. That is called as sin. In contrary to what Shastras are saying. That's called as sin. Of course, sin is contextual in many cases. So, for example, sometimes we share this in the Bhakti Viksha programs, especially for beginners, we give this example. And sometimes in the classes also we give this example here on Saturday feast or Sunday feast class. That if a person is on the battlefront and he's part of the Australian army, or let's Indian army, which I am more familiar with. So India is most of the time fighting across the border with Pakistan. So let's say the person is given a AK-47 rifle. And he is being told, okay, go and kill the soldiers. And he goes and kills soldiers, the enemies who are trying to enter the territory and protecting the nation. And then he goes and he gets a salute and he gets an award and a medal from the president, right? Paramveer Chakra, whatever that he is given, some chakra he is given, some medal he is given. So the person starts thinking, hang on, oh, AK-47, medal, okay. I have had problems with my neighbor since many days. Not cooperating with me. So let me turn the gun on him and do the same activity and expect a medal. Okay. So obviously you know what he's going to get. In India we call it as section 302. 302. Okay. He'll get jail. Like that. And maybe no,
death penalty.
Hang to death. Huh?
Death penalty.
Death penalty. 300. That's what he will get. He will not get a medal. So, actions are relative in this material world. So, what is sin? The action is the same. But sometimes it becomes meritorious. And sometimes the same activity is condemnable. Like that. However, Prabhupada has made it easy for us by giving four activities which are sinful under any circumstance. What are those four activities? We all know. Meat eating. Illicit sex, intoxication and gambling. Under no circumstances can these be justified. Of course, this may generate a question, why did Yudhishthira gamble? He was a pure devotee. How was he justified in gambling? Right? For that, I request all of you to hear a series of lectures called as Controversies in the Mahabharata. Please hear this lecture. It is given by my godbrother Govind Prabhu. Very beautiful series of lectures. How can Draupadi be called as chaste when she has married 5 men? This is another question. Karna, such a nice fellow. What was his fault? Jai Karna. Many people are on Karna's side. There are movies also made, you know, in Bollywood, which support Bollywood or Tollywood, Tamil Nadu, somewhere. There is an entire movie on how Karna is more glorious. They are completely projecting Karna as the hero of the Mahabharata. No? So people have don't have correct knowledge of these things. So these, and even Ekalavya. How can Dronacharya ask for his thumb? It's unfair. Because Ekalavya had the power to match Arjuna. He was such an arth, no? And he was not, he was rejected as a disciple by Dronacharya. So he made a statue of Dronacharya and then became very expert at that. And when Dronacharya came, he sensed something wrong there. And he said, okay, Guru Dakshina, I want to give you Guru Dakshina. What do you want? He said, give me your thumb. And that finished his career in archery. And people are crying, oh, Ekalavya, it's not unfair. Dronacharya has not behaved shastrically. So our mind will obviously, because we are seeing everything from the platform of mundane morality. So a devotee has to lift himself above the platform of the three modes of material nature. Morality comes under which platform? Mode of goodness. But a devotee sees everything from the transcendental viewpoint. And that's, and many people struggle from going from the mode of goodness to the transcendental mode. So one has to be able to, one has to hear from very senior realized souls. And Govind Prabhu is one such soul who has given this series of lectures for our benefit. So I request all of you, it's there in ISKCON Desire Tree. You can go and search for, you know, put a search on Govinda, G-O-V-I-N-D-A, or go to Govind Prabhu and see his lectures. In seminars, you will find that. Controversies in the Mahabharata. Some of them he has given in Hindi. So if you cannot understand Hindi, then ask someone, your friend or somebody, devotee friend, to hear it, who knows Hindi, and then explain it to you in English.
So, Prabhu, can you give a quick view about Dhritarashtra gambling?
Not now. I'll give it in some other class. If you're not, but you first hear the lecture. Okay, otherwise, it's a huge topic. It can't be done in 1 minute. I had to hear the lecture 3 times to understand what he's talking. It's so complex. Draupadi was the most complex. I got a headache actually. I actually got a headache because I heard it 3 times and it was so complex that I couldn't follow the thread what Govind Prabhu is trying to speak. Govind Prabhu's lectures are very deep. Some intelligence is required and I don't have that. Prabhu, so I have to hear it 3 or 4 times.
You are lesser souls than you.
No, not like that. But you hear that. Some of us may be able to connect very fast. Like that. But for me, it took me many attempts and still I still haven't got a full grip on it. So sometimes what happens, when I sit with a notebook, then I understand better. Because I like to write points. So I hear that, I think, and then I think about it, and again go back, again hear, again write. Then it. So I haven't done that exercise. So, but I'm happy to take a separate session on that, if you like. But if we do it today, then we'll not do justice to other
parts. The first 35, you said, discharging one's duty in one's own grihastha is better than doing sannyasa. But how do you understand then Vishwamitra, who was born as a Brahmana, I mean Kshatriya, but he became like a very powerful Rishi, Brahmana, and vice versa, like Parashuram, who was born as a Brahmana, but he became acted like a Kshatriya, but they were perfect in their own, whatever new ashram they took. How do you understand that?
Yeah. So one can change one's ashram. There is no problem. Kadamakaran Maharaj was a grihastha. He changed. Now he is a sannyasi. Gurujan Prabhu and Jagatani Mataji were grihasthas. Now they are vanaprasthas. So one can move from one ashram to another. What Lord is saying here, don't be in one ashram and do the duty of another ashram. That's what he said.
They're talking about varna, I think.
What is that?
More than ashram, I think the question was...
No, anything. So don't be in one varna and try to do, you know, job of another varna. Okay. Understand? So for example, if you are a sannyasi, and in India it has happened, especially in some matter, I don't want to name it because I'm on camera. You will find great leaders, spiritual leaders, who have got so much involved into, you know, into nationalism, politics, etc. So what they are trying to do, they are actually supposed to do job of a Brahmana, but they have got into administration and they are trying to, you know, go there and, you know, show their prowess. And what happened? The whole matha has collapsed because of that. And people are directionless now. Right? So that is what happens. So being in one ashram or being in one varna, don't try to poke your nose into another varna. Wherever you are, sthane sthita, wherever you are, you're in grihastha ashram, do that, execute that properly. And follow Krishna consciousness.
So is that decided by birth or by...
No. Guna karma vipaka. Chatur. Chatur varuna maya shastra. Guna karma. It's not by birth. It's by guna and... It's by our aptitudes that we take some ashram and some occupation.
Earlier also there used to be like Rajaguru, and King used to take advice of the Rajaguru before he took any important decision.
Yes.
So the Brahmanas also used to advise.
Correct. That is the right Varnashrama Dharma. So king is still doing the job of administration. King is still doing the job of administration, but he is taking advice under the Brahminical layer. He is doing that administration under the umbrella of spiritual instruction, Brahminical instruction. But he is still doing administration. For example, a king may decide that the tax percentage in this year will be 5.5%. Okay? Because if I increase the tax percentage, then people may not have enough to survive, and therefore they may have to work doubly hard, so they will not have time for spiritual life. So he's consulting the Brahmanas and saying, oh, reduce the tax, whatever. On the other hand, he may increase the tax also, saying that people have now too much of wealth, such that they are becoming intoxicated and, you know, whatever, whatever. He may increase that. But everything he is doing under Brahminical guidance. Of course, I'm just giving a very mundane example, but this is how it is. Every decision is taken under Brahman. But he's not doing the job of a Brahmana. The king has not started advising as if he is a Brahmana. He is taking advice of a Brahmana. Or the Brahmanas are not, you know, getting into the activity of, you know, is the tax procedures, you know, correct? No, they are not sitting and writing down policy documents like that. They are giving Shastrical guidance. Under that, the policy documents are there. Even in management theory. In management theory, the shared values of an organization decides the strategy of an organization. The strategy decides the structure of an organization. The strategy decides the systems in an organization, systems and processes. The strategy decides the skills in an organization, right? The strategy decides the style of management an organization needs to follow, like that. So everything is still coming from the shared value circle. This is actually the McKinsey 7S model of corporate governance, like that. So same thing, when you apply the values that govern a society, the core set of those shared values come from Krishna conscious principles. Now that will manifest in the same in the form of policies, guidelines, you know, processes, systems, right? Yeah.
So how about the Brahmanas taking charge as administrators? Like, for example, the Peshwas from Maratha lines, they supposed to be Brahmanas, but they took charge of administration.
There are exceptions in the Bhagavatam where it has happened. When Vena, King Vena, fell down, not fell down, he was already fallen. So, yeah, so the Brahmanas, by their mantra power, they finished Vena. That was because the situation demanded so. So there are exceptions.
Even Dronacharya.
Fighting in the battle.
Dronacharya, yeah. He was a Brahmana fighting in the battlefield. There are exceptions to every rule. But that's not the rule, those are exceptions.
So Peshwas doesn't come under this.
Pardon?
Peshwas, the recent example. From Maharashtra, they Brahminical cult, they took the role of administrators.
Who's
Peshwa?
Peshwa. Peshwa. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Peshwa. So, yeah. How do we change the meeting in this case, like here? Because
I'm not sure. I have to read the whole context of what was the problem with Peshwas, or what did they want to achieve at the end of the day.
No, see, and in Kali Yuga, I read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita or somewhere that in Kali Yuga there are no Varnas left. It's all mixed up in Kali Yuga. Only ashramas are left in Kali Yuga. Varnas are all mixed up. It's all gone.
Hello, Shudra Sambhava.
Everybody is Shudra.
So, that applies to anybody, even the Peshwas. So, but please understand, whatever Peshwa or, you know, Morarji, Baji, or, you know, Karaji, and whatever you talk about, whatever we talk about at the end of the day, what were they fighting for? They were attached, their whole identity was what? Their identity was Jai Maharashtra. Right? Their attachment was for a piece of land. Their identity was a piece of land. And today we are talking exactly about that. And sorry to say that, but Prabhupada calls it as lust. Attachment to one's country, land, all these are symptoms of different manifestations of lust, Prabhupada says. It's very difficult to, you know, digest this. Because, you know, these people, actually they have been glorified in the books of history. Even I ended up, you know, writing about Morar Baji, how he saved, you know, when Shivaji went ahead and, you know, Baji Prabhu, how he saved the fort of Sinhagad or something like that. You know, I have studied all this in history. We are used to glorifying all these people. Yes, they have certain lot of good qualities in the sense that they have sacrificed their lives for the welfare of others. But again, there is a difference between the mode of goodness and seeing things from a spiritual standpoint. For example, the same Shivaji, okay, when he is meeting Sant Ramdas, Saint Ramdas, okay, now that is an activity which when I came to Krishna consciousness, that I really started appreciating in King Shivaji. Because then he took spiritual guidance from Sant Ramdas. Like that. In fact, he told Sant Ramdas that I want to join you. But he said, no, you go ahead and do your duty as a Kshatriya. So that is the guidance that a saintly person gives. You go, rule it under Vedic principles. Like that. And which I think Shivaji Maharaj did to quite an extent. He established a lot of order in society. He was a very virtuous and good king. Like that. Of course, he had to do his job of keeping the Mughals away. Because the Mughals were trying to take over. But anyway, I don't want to get into that part. But please understand, there is a difference between working in the mode of goodness and working in the transcendental mode of goodness. So if you really want to analyze specifically about Peshwas, then we'll have to read the entire history of Peshwas and then find out whether they were operating in the transcendental mode of goodness or the mode of goodness. Better to read Bhagavatam, given the short time that we have. Prabhupada's books itself is taking a lifetime for us. Okay, so definition of sin is papam, and there are four activities which are condemned regardless of anything. Meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex and gambling. Why? Because these are the four principles of dharma. What is destroyed by meat eating?
Compassion.
What is destroyed by illicit sex?
Cleanliness.
Then what is destroyed by intoxication?
Austerity.
By gambling?
Truthfulness.
So these are sins in any situation. Okay. So, how do we differentiate what is sin and what is not sin? This is coming directly from the Shastras. The principles of Dharma, they come from the Shastras, from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dharmam tu shakshat Bhagavat Pranitam. So, there is no other person who can tell us what is Dharma. So, to know whether an activity is in which mode of goodness and whether it should have been done or not, from the lens of, for example, Manu Samhita, something may be okay. But from the lens of Paramahamsa Samhita, which is Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is called as Paramahamsa Samhita. From Manu Samhita, it may be okay. Because Manu Samhita is law for mankind. Little bit of morality stuff comes in. But Paramahamsa Samhita, Srimad Bhagavatam Rasamalayam, it is above all the three modes of nature. So from that lens, the perspective is completely different. And we'll see one or two aspects today of that perspective. So, Srila Prabhupada says that originally, the nature of every individual is what? Sinless. No soul is sinful. The soul actually cannot be touched by sin. Only it is covered by sin, but it doesn't get mixed with sin. It's covered by the layer of ignorance. So, originally the nature of the soul is pure. And whatever nature that a conditioned soul is acquiring, that is called as the acquired nature of the soul. And because of the acquired nature of the soul, then the soul engages in meat eating, intoxication, all those things. Mm-hmm.
Prabhu, I've got a question.
Yeah.
Not sure which verse, but few verses back that five types of arapana, vyana, he said the soul gets contaminated
by those. Yeah. The five life aids.
But now you said the soul is covered, but soul is not contaminated.
No, the soul is the fact that the soul is covered, that phenomenon is called as contamination. When it is covered, the soul is pure. Soul is always pure. It's covered by that. For example, if I'm walking with a white shirt, you know, in Bombay, after some time the shirt appears brown color because of the emissions on the trucks and whatever. Okay, but it's still a. You cannot say, oh, what beautiful brown shirt you're wearing. It is white shirt you'll say. So then you will say, okay, prove it to me. Okay, put it in the detergent powder, and when it comes out, then it is supposed to come out sparkling. The company is really, product is genuine, right? And you can see the brown, thing in the bucket like that. So the soul is like that. The soul originally is pure. It appears because of the association with modes of material nature. It covers the original qualities of the soul. It covers the original potency of the soul. And that's why, because of his acquired nature, the soul develops those defects. Making mistakes, being under illusion, cheating propensity and senses are imperfect. Which Prabhupada writes in that Purnamadam, the first purport of Isopanishad. So that's an acquired nature. So because of the cheating propensity, the soul may start thinking that whatever sinful activities I'm doing, maybe Paramatma is making me do that. Because of the cheating propensity. So therefore Prabhupada is clearly clarifying here that Paramatma is not responsible for sinful activity. Paramatma is also not responsible for us not doing some duty. You know? Sometimes when we tell people, you know, Haribol Prabhuji, please come sometime to the temple. Oh, jab Prabhu ki ichha hogi, hum aa jayenge. Jab Prabhu bulayenge, hum aayenge. Which means, Adrian Prabhu, for you in English.
Okay.
Oh, when the Lord calls, he will come to the temple. The call has not come. As if Krishna will personally knock at the doorstep or give a call on the cell phone and say, can you please come? Like that. So this is, what they are doing is they are blaming their laziness on an internal call which is supposed to come. So I am blaming Paramatma now for not coming to the temple. Right? Or I go and murder someone and as Prabhu pointed out, I am saying, my Paramatma told me to kill. Like that. Right? This is just shifting. This is all mind game. That's all. There is no truth. There is no fact in it. Paramatma is Upadrushtan Anumanta. Paramatma is Bhagavan himself. He will only guide us in the path of self-realization. But even Paramatma doesn't take over our free will. He will tell you, don't do this. But our free will, we can still go ahead. That one free will, Lord never takes away from us. And that is, free will is the root of all our misery. In one sense. Misuse of that free will. So it's very important to understand this central point in this purport, that sinful reactions are not impelled by the super soul. So then what is the cause of this sinful reaction? If it's not super soul, what is it then? Lord Krishna explains in the next verse. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, it is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion and later transformed into wrath, and which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world.
Udamani Mataji? When a living entity comes in contact with the material creation, his eternal love for Krishna is transformed into lust in association with the mode of passion. Or in other words, the sense of love of God becomes transformed into lust, as milk in contact with sour tamarind is transformed into yogurt. Then again, when lust is unsatisfied, it turns into wrath. Wrath is transformed into illusion, and illusion continues the material existence. Therefore, lust is the greatest enemy of the living entity, and it is lust only which induces the pure living entity to remain entangled in the material world. Wrath is the manifestation of the mode of ignorance. These modes exhibit themselves as wrath and other corollaries. If therefore the mode of passion, instead of being degraded into the mode of ignorance, is elevated to the mode of goodness by the prescribed method of living and acting, then one can be saved from the degradation of wrath by spiritual action.
Thank you.
Other points?
Lust is only in the mode of passion, and if it's uncontrolled and unbridled, then it will degrade us into the mode of ignorance and thereby resulting in wrath. But if through some control, you know, we can lift it up into the mode of goodness, then we can get some control over lust until we transcend that, until we transcend it to the ignorance.
Prabhu, what
does
the word lust in Tamil
mean?
What does it call?
Kamam.
Kamam. Kamam and kovam. In Tamil.
Kamam will become kovam.
Krodham.
Kamam, krodham.
So Krishna is saying kama yeshaka, krodha yeshaka.
Kama.
The verse itself.
Yeah, kama yeshaka, krodha yeshaka.
Thanks.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
The lust also originates from the Supreme, because originate is love, so actually lust is also coming from Supreme. So actually I had a question on that. I mean, it says it comes from Supreme, but actually in essence it doesn't come from Supreme, right? In the spiritual it is actually love. No, only when it comes in material world it is lust. Right?
Perverted reflection.
Actually, there is no lust in soul, spiritual life.
There is love.
There is lust, But that is not material lust. In the spiritual
it's
world.
It's pure love.
Yeah, it's pure love. But still, the gopis are attracted by Krishna. They want him.
That's why it's said that.
In that sense, that lust is there. And Radharani also gets angry when Lord Krishna is going, you know, when she finds out that, you know, he's gone somewhere else. She is getting angry. Satyabhama gets angry. Like that. So there is that intense desire for Krishna. The attraction to Krishna is so much that in one sense you can call that as a spiritual lust.
That's true.
Yeah.
So in that sense,
but Prabhupada said English is an imperfect language. So you cannot really substitute with English words those feelings. Like that.
So in that sense, lust actually originates from
yes.
So is Prabhupada means that lust, or is he meaning the actual pure love?
If Prabhupada, whenever he is talking about the spiritual world, he is meaning love. And in the material world, he is saying it's lust. In the spiritual world, it's called as Divyonmad. Divya Unmad, which means transcendental madness. Which is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also came to demonstrate to all of us. What is the transcendental madness? Oh, Krishna, Krishna, everywhere. He sees a hill and then he is seeing, okay, it's Govardhan Hill. It is not Govardhan Hill, but he is perceiving it as Govardhan. Everywhere you see Krishna and you are searching everywhere. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Like that. Just like, now in the material world, you know, you can't even relate actually. You know, it's not good to relate both, but the material lust is how? A person who is always women hunting. Okay, this woman. Okay, shall I have association with her? Shall I have union with her? Or she looks beautiful more. Oh, she is. Okay, she. Okay, she. Like that. You know? So our senses are completely now mad after a woman's flesh. Whereas there, that madness is completely for attaining Krishna's association. So this is a perverted reflection of that.
So
this attraction.
Say,
yeah.
So can you say that the material lust is attachment to the matter, the dead matter, while spiritual lust is attachment to the
to Krishna.
Spirit?
To Krishna.
To Krishna.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, and material lust comes out of contact with the three modes of material nature. And spiritual lust comes out of...
Spiritual lust doesn't come from anywhere. It is already there inside. It has to be uncovered, that's all. Prabhupada says Krishna consciousness is not an artificial imposition on the mind. We don't have to develop spiritual lust.
Mm-hmm.
We have to purify ourselves to realize that spiritual lust. Because that's our constitutional position. Okay.
One more point to Bhajagopinam, Adi Shankara says this word. Angam galitam, phalitam mundam. That is like body is old and weak and you already bald and man is holding, taking support of a stick. Still the dust doesn't go away.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to get away from this, our
good.
Yeah.
Good point. Okay, so there are a lot of points that Srila Prabhupada makes here in 37. The first point he makes is, lust is more subtle than wrath. Is it pronounced as wrath or wrath? What's the correct English
pronunciation?
Wrath.
Wrath.
So lust is more subtle than wrath. Lust may actually go unnoticed. And that is the biggest problem. Lust is like diabetes. It's a silent killer. It's not manifest outside. What's going on inside the heart is maybe different than what the external is like. So therefore it's more dangerous. It may go undetected. Lust may come in many forms. Lusty people may even be there all around in the congregation. Entirely possible. Even in devotees, because everyone is in different grades, Sakama levels, 10 to 90. There may be attraction to Krishna, but still there may be lust in the heart. Very much possible. It is this lust itself, despite the very good intentions of ISKCON. ISKCON has pure intentions. In fact, ISKCON is probably the only institution in the world. Maybe there are other mathas also, but really who are enforcing the four regulative principles, chanting minimum 16 rounds, no compromise. Prabhupada gives very high standards. But despite all this integrity of purpose, ISKCON still went through the most turbulent period at the time of child abuse earlier. And many times, people are saying that, oh, because of this, you know, in your ISKCON, this happened and that happened, therefore, you know. When childhood, when same abuse happens in office, people don't say, "Oh, but in this company, child abuse is happening, so therefore I put in my papers." No, nobody does that. But when it comes to bhakti, people will take shelter of all these things. That this happened and that happened, therefore I am not doing. So the world is also taking undue advantage of this. But a serious devotee knows what is an imperfection which is a result of probably management issues and lack of governance, and what is a genuine issue which is because of lack of depth of spiritual principles. So in ISKCON, there is no lack of depth of spiritual principles. Our philosophy is perfect. There is no philosophy in this world which can match Vaishnava philosophy. No philosophy can match. It is the highest philosophy. Right? And this institution is started by a pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada. So there is nothing wrong with the purpose, there is nothing wrong with the intent. There could be something wrong, which was early days, that the governance was not as much lacking. And something slipped through the cracks and all these things happened. So even within such a pure institution, still people somehow entered with a genuine intention of doing bhakti maybe, but then, you know, obviously their desires were not fulfilled, so they took advantage and got into, you know, maya, despite their Krishna consciousness. Maya overtook and therefore all these things happened like that. So this lust is a silent killer. It can attack at any point in time. So a devotee should never take his or her purity for granted. This can come any moment and attack. So therefore, ever since, ISKCON has also implemented strict vigilance and policies around all these things. Even Anirudh Prabhu, during the strategic meeting, he was continuously emphasizing, you know, that we need to do something for child care here, to protect the children, keeping an eye, because so many children are there, they are playing in the courtyard, we don't know who comes into the temple, who goes out, you know, somebody may come, oh, your child is going for doing book distribution, and then how, whether he will take advantage, we don't know, right? So we cannot take for granted, just because everything is, you know, temple and spiritual atmosphere, that vigilance is still required. There is nothing wrong with the philosophy.
Champaklata Mataji had come, no, child protection.
Yeah,
she did that seminar.
Yeah, Champaklata Mataji, she talked about this as well.
She came to start that team, no, child protection team.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, Champaklata Mataji was here, and she, I think you attended that seminar, right?
Little bit
of that, yeah. So there was a Mataji who had come here specifically for establishing, you know, child protection policies in the temple. Anyway, so the point that we are trying to say is that ISKCON itself has gone through constant challenge. So this lust can attack from anywhere and any time. So we have to always guard against this enemy of lust in our life. It's a constant challenge. Even Ajamila went through lust. Ajamila was, you know, pakka Brahman, right? But then he just inadvertently saw a man kissing a prostitute and getting intimate, and immediately Ajamila's head, you know, gone. Dhyayato Vishayan Pumsan. He started meditating on that, and then he developed attachment for that prostitute. He married her, and of course, thankfully, you know, he said Narayana at the end of his lifetime, so Vishnudutas saved him from the Yamudutas. But still, that lust is so powerful. So, and of course, Ajamila was in the forest, but the forest is verily here in Australia in the form of tram and train. Whatever Ajamil saw in the forest, we are seeing every day in tram. Right? Openly it is all happening. So our minds are also getting constantly challenged. And Maya is saying, oh, what? Yeah, you are hearing, like, just stop, man. Look, that fellow is enjoying, you know, like that, in the front seat with his girlfriend. You also enjoy. But here, anything goes in public. So it's okay, chalta. And then our minds are getting... That is why this protection and regulation is extremely important. All around it is there. You go to a theater, it is there. You go to a theme park, it is there. You cannot avoid it. You go for cherry picking in a farm, there you will find two couples sitting under a tree. Like that. You can't do anything. You look everywhere, this is going on. And our children are also exposed since an early age. To some extent, in India, because I don't know how it is now, I heard it has become, you know, we have caught up now with the West. But earlier days, at least, there was some regulation. Nobody will publicly, I have never seen, you know, in the train or something like that. Even the husband is sitting with wife, no? He will not hold hand of the wife in public. Nobody will do that in India. Or holding hands and walking like that. No, nobody will do all that. That was Vedic culture. Never. Right? Because the children will learn from the parents. The parents are doing that in public, children will also do it. Right? Then there is no point in saying, you know, for my children's sake, I want them to become Prahlad and all that. There is no point. Because we have to become Prahlad first. Like that. Okay? So, because of this degraded culture that we are now exposed to, then we are constantly vulnerable. Constantly vulnerable. You know, you may have done attentive chanting, 16 rounds, everything, everything, but cannot take it for granted. Because all this scene is right ahead of us, in front of us. Even if nothing gets you, an advertisement will be there. You know, it's a Nokia phone or some phone, will cell phone, but somehow the lady is not wearing clothes. I don't know what it has got to do with the product. Right? So immediately, because if you put cell phone there, nobody will see. But say, very good. Oh, what is our cell phone? So immediately that attraction. Like that. And then it agitates your mind. Oh, like that. You are nicely hearing Bhagavatam and now something is alluring you. So this is a constant challenge for all of us. Constant challenge. So lust is more subtler than wrath. And this lust, the second quality is what? It burns like
fire
inside the heart. And Srila Prabhupada says further down that fulfilling this lust is like putting
fuel
on the fire, not pouring water on the fire. The more you fulfill it, the more it will burn. Therefore, the philosophies which say enjoy till there was one person from India who became very popular in the United States. The philosophy that what I heard was that enjoy till you exhaust it. But Lord Krishna is saying the more you enjoy, the more there will be desire to enjoy the same thing. Because last experience was like that. Again, you will go for the same experience. Like that. So therefore, one has to really understand that fulfilling it doesn't mean that, okay, I'll fulfill it now so that it goes away. No. We may inadvertently fulfill that. But we have to always remember Lord Krishna's instruction that fulfilling that will only increase that desire. Past experience, one wants again and again and again and again. It burns more fiercely. So the mind dwells on the past experience. Sees innovative ways of fulfilling that also. Through media, through movie, through advertisements, all these things generate those desires within the heart. Like that. Public places. These are all impediments to our reaching Krishna. Gaurang Prabhu, my godbrother, he once said that the mind is like a camera. You know, those cameras which you used to have earlier, click and then it takes the image and stores it in a film. And the film is processed in a dark room. So the mind sees an object of sense gratification, takes the picture of it and stores it in the mind itself, and then the intelligence starts then meditating on that object. Oh, how nice that scene was. Very nice, very nice, very nice. And then what happens? That film is developed under dark room. So under the mode of darkness, mode of ignorance, then those desires become manifest after some time. And then we try to artificially control, and one day, bam! Okay, we hear, so and so, fallen down, like that. So therefore, this lust is a deadly enemy. So it is called as Mahapapma. Mahapapma means what? Worst of sins and worst enemy, deadliest enemy.
Mahapapma or Papma?
Mahapapma is in the verse, but same thing, Mahapapma. So, it is mentioned that in Rajneeti, you know what is Rajneeti? Rajneeti means diplomacy. In the field, in the domain of diplomacy, it is said that one should conquer one's friend in three ways. One should conquer one's enemy in three ways. The first is that you can control an enemy through words. Right? In office we use it very often. If we know that somebody is, you know, trying to be very smart and he'll kick our chair, then we go and glorify. Oh, you're such a wonderful person. I see that you are the only person who never plays politics in office. Like that. A very genuine person you are. Maybe he will not kick my chair after that. Having said that. Or you try to win him over with words. Oh, you're wearing a nice shirt, man. By the way, where did you get it from? Oh, this is so genuine. Oh, wonderful. It suits you perfect. So, our enemy we can try to conquer by words. Our enemy we can try to conquer by gifts. Right? We can take something and then on his birthday you give him something. So don't trouble me in office from tomorrow. Take this. I brought Parker pen for you. I've got Taj Mahal from India for you. Please take. Like that. The third is, if words and gifts not, then punishment. Position. We can even give position. Sorry. We can give position to that person. Okay. The most troublesome element, political element, can be given a
position.
We implemented it, isn't it? Last week. we give a position to that person in office, and then sometimes we can give punishment. These are the four ways in which you control an enemy. But this lust is so bad, mahapapma, you cannot control it by words, by gifts, by giving it a position. The only way is danda. This danda means what? Punishment, not danda. Dand means punishment in Sanskrit. So lust, the only way is punishment. Of course, the proactive way of controlling lust is by seeking able guidance to conquer this lust. So it's the mightiest enemy. Next point which comes out from Prabhupada's purport is lust arises from the mode of passion. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport that instead of degrading into mode of ignorance, elevate to mode of goodness by prescribed methods of living and acting. So lift it. And Srila Prabhupada has given us a regimen for overcoming lust by prescribed methods. What is that? Rise early for chanting. When the body is fresh after a good night's sleep, then the desire to enjoy also goes up, because now the body is fresh to enjoy the opposite sex, like that. So get up early and then get out from that bed and go and chant, like that. So that is one. Then take bath. Taking bath itself is a wonderful activity. Bath immediately lifts one from the mode of ignorance to the mode of goodness. Many of you have felt like that, right? When you take a bath, now I can chant much better, like that. So it's, of course, chanting is not dependent. Tatrarpita niyamita smaranena kala. It's not dependent on any rules and regulations, but still it helps, like that. So this is a facilitator. Take bath. Then the other prescribed method is what? Laudably accept grihasthashram. Take to grihasthashram. Don't pretend that, you know, a very renounced brahmachari, like that. And then the mind is dwelling on the opposite sex. Go and marry. Of course, take the responsibilities of grihasthashram. After that, go and work. Right? And engage free time in prescribed duties or Krishna conscious services. Most of the effect, the lust affects most when we have
idle
time. This is common for everyone. I have heard so many lectures. Everywhere this is hammered. Lust comes and attacks us only when we have idle time. So pack your day in such a way with Krishna conscious activities or your prescribed duties. What are the prescribed duties of a grihastha? Going to work, right? Children's education. These are all prescribed duties of a grihasthashram, right? Doing household activities, vacuuming, cleaning, washing clothes, washing utensils, whatever. So pack the day in such a way, right? And then free time, not free time, planned time for reading Bhagavatam, for attending, you know, some course or whatever, like all of you are doing now, like that. So pack the day, not only Saturday, pack Sundays also, pack Mondays also, like that. Pack all the days like that, in such a way that there is very less time for the mind to be idle. When the mind is idle, maya chapatya dare. It will come and catch you. Oh, idle time, come on. Why don't you watch something? Oh, very good. So like that. So very, we have to pack our day in activities which are in the mode of goodness. Even when we are doing passionate activities somehow. For example, washing utensils and doing vacuum, these are all passionate activities. So I have seen Emanuela does that very often in the house. Every time she is washing utensils or doing anything, lecture is on in the house. So she is always listening, which is good. I used to do that before, I am not doing it very often now. Maybe I should start doing that now. So that's a good way of being in Shuddha Sattva. Maharaja's lecture is playing always in the background, like that, or some other devotee. Lust need not go with old age. What is that? Galitam, Mundam, that verse. So the Lord says, Daivi Hesha Gunamai Mama Maya Duratya. Maam Evaya Prapadyante Maya Metantaranti. The only way that lust can be overcome is by engaging in my devotional service. Nowhere it is said in the scripture, lust will automatically go away with old age. The example is also there of King Akbar and Birbal, right? I think Akbar and Birbal story, right?
Prabhupada said that story.
Prabhupada said that story of Akbar and Birbal. Birbal was a minister. Akbar thought that old age, sex desire goes away. So Birbal told, no, come to the hospital. When you come to the hospital, get your granddaughter also. Granddaughter or? No?
Daughter.
Get your daughter also. So the old man was lying in the deathbed, right? He's suffering. But when he saw King Akbar's daughter, then a smile, you know, his beam, and then he was assessing her like that. So then Birbal said, look, his one foot is in the grave, but his desire attraction has not gone even now. So this doesn't go with old age like that. If you read, you know, the newspaper, you also find 70-year-old rapes 16-year-old. You'll find full news is like that nowadays, right? School teacher rapes. I was hearing a lecture today when we were traveling to Mill Park program. School teacher misbehaved with, you know, tried to molest girl. So he's in the position of a guru, teacher, and then he's molesting the girl like that.
So Father.
Father and daughter. Maximum in times of India, this news nowadays. Father and daughter. It's shocking, actually. Can't even imagine this. But father and daughter. So even that relationship, one needs to be careful in Kali Yuga. Therefore, Prabhupada said, one should not be with one's own daughter or even mother alone in a room.
Or sister.
Yes, alone in a room. Just imagine. So, how careful we have to be. And Prabhupada is warning us, cautioning us on this. So, lust does not go with old age. Lust transforms into wrath or anger eventually, if not fulfilled. We have seen many Bollywood movies are of this theme. The villain is always eyeing on the heroine like that, and he has been meditating on her, but the heroine is spurning his offers like that, rejecting it, and after that he says, "Now I have caught you today," and then the hero jumps, of course, from somewhere he lands there, and there is fighting going on, you know? And then the hero wins and the heroine is, you know, freed, and the movie is over after that, like that, okay? But the theme is same, that the villain has been meditating on this heroine for many days, and one day what happens? He is not able to control, so he goes and tries to molest. So that is the dhyayato vishayam pumsa. Whatever is in the mind, if kept unchecked, will eventually lead into activity. So it has to be checked at that level by the process of chanting the Hare Krishna. Now, lust is more subtle, it is said, and anger is more manifest. So angry people can be found out very easily, little bit lesser devil, like that. Okay? And this anger can also be channelized very nicely. It's difficult to channelize lust, but it is. But anger can be channelized. For example, anger can be channelized against blasphemers of devotees, against aggressors, against mayavadis. We can channelize our anger. And in the spiritual world, anger is channelized always for the pleasure of Krishna. Even in Kurukshetra, Arjuna wouldn't have fought without anger. So he used his anger to serve the Lord. Like Radharani gets angry with Krishna all the time. But that anger is very pleasing to the Lord. Right? Tax collection pastime, which we saw, you know, in our Bhakti Vriksha programs. She's standing and saying, you know, you have to pay tax to now. And then the gopis are tying all the gopas and then giving them a good thrashing. They are saying, we will not pay tax. This is Radharani's land, you guys have to pay tax. No? So this is apparently a pastime of anger. They are actually thrashing, beating them, the coward boys. Right? So this anger is different. So this anger is what is there even in the spiritual world, which gives rust to the Lord, which gives pleasure to the Lord. So it can be channelized. Or the anger of a guru towards his disciple, where the guru is chastising the disciple, the spiritual master. That anger is also spiritual in nature. So anger can be channelized in multiple ways. So Lord Krishna is explaining in the next verse the different degrees of covering of lust. Because lust is so subtle, no? So how the purity of the soul is covered by this lust, he's explaining in the next few verses.
Anger can be channelized, but lust cannot be channelized. It only has to be removed.
It has to be transformed into love. The Supreme Personality of... Where are we
now?
37 verse. 37 we did, right? 38. As fire is covered by smoke, as a mirror is covered by dust, or as the embryo is covered by the womb, the living entity is similarly covered by different degrees of lust. Thus, the wise living entity's pure consciousness becomes covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. We have discussed some of these points. So some more points we will discuss on 38 and 39. So here, Srila Prabhupada is giving three examples. The three examples are in an ascending order of covering. Now covering what?
Soul.
Correct. Not lust.
Soul.
The covering is of the conscious. So we have to understand this analogy correctly. Otherwise, no. Because we are talking lust, 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 and then it's covering. So as if it looks as if something is covering lust. No, it's covering pure consciousness. These examples. So the first degree of covering, Prabhupada says, is just as a fire is covered by smoke. So what is the fire? Pure consciousness is the fire. And what is covering it? Smoke. That is the analogy of lust. Or contamination, if you like. So contamination is covering pure consciousness. Pure consciousness is akin to fire, and contaminated consciousness is compared to smoke. That's the first level of covering. So it indicates a thin layer of covering, which means our anarthas are now not so mature. Very thin anarthas, like that. So Prabhupada is, Bhujan Prabhu writes in his purport, that the reason Prabhupada is writing like this, because the heat and light coming from the fire are still manifest and usable. That's why this analogy is being given by Prabhupada. And this is compared to the human form. Am I clear or have you lost me? So there are 3 degrees of covering of pure consciousness by contamination. The first degree of covering is the lowest level, which is the analogy is fire covered by smoke. So this is the thinnest layer of covering. This is the lowest level of covering, thinnest layer of covering, where the heat and light of the fire are still usable and visible and manifest like that.
It's difficult to understand, probably. I mean, anyway, if you go through the 3 levels,
yeah.
Is it the reaction that you get a human life because you had such a covering, or is it, how can we directly compare it?
No, if you say the next two, he will come.
Yeah.
In the class.
So this is the analogy Prabhupada is giving is the human form. In human, we have got a human form for self-realization. So we have already exhausted a lot of karmas to come to the human platform. And in the human platform only, do we have the power to inquire into the goal of life? Do we have the power for rational thinking? We have the power of discrimination, right? All this is a prerogative of human form of life. It's not available in other animal forms, right? So, therefore, Prabhupada is comparing this to human form. The second is mirror covered by dust. So, it is the analogy is that it is getting thicker now. The covering, the contamination layer is thicker now because one cannot see the reflection at all now. Earlier, we were at least able to see a little bit of fire within the smoke, but now you can't see anything, right? But at least we can see the mirror. We can't see the reflection, but at least there is something. So there is birds and beasts, Prabhupada is given. Birds and beasts. There is some activity going on between birds and beasts. The third is compared to the embryo within the womb. The embryo within the womb cannot move at all. No independence, nothing. It just gets weighed. Whatever the mother eats, the embryo has to tolerate that. Wherever the mother goes, it has to tolerate. If the mother smokes, the embryo also smokes. Like that, inhales, like that. There is no choice. So this is like the child inside the womb, which can neither move nor can be seen. And Prabhupada compares that to trees. Right? For example, in India, there are not, but India there are not enough public urinals. So people can, you know, pass urine anywhere. Right? Usually we say paid ke niche. Like that. So the tree does not object to that. But if you urinate on a leopard, you know what will happen. Correct? Isn't it? Correct? So that is why it is said, actually that is why it is said taro riva sahishnuna. Trinadapi sunichena taro riva sahishnuna. As tolerant as a
tree.
Because a tree, you can do anything with a tree. After that, you can even cut the tree and then make, you know, furniture out of that. Right? So therefore, the tree is so insensitive in one sense. It has got no choice. It is in one location only. Bare bodied in one location. So that is like the embryo covered by the womb. That is a very pitiable position, a very low level of life, at the body of a tree, where the covering is so thick that one has, because of that karma, one has become a tree. And Srila Prabhupada said that if one is very, one has got the habit of exposing one's body all the time, then you are sowing the life in the future to become a tree, because tree doesn't need any covering. Yeah, actually Prabhupada said that those kind of people get birth as trees, where you don't, you can just stand wherever you want, in the natural form. So, only human form offers a chance to conquer lust by cultivation of Krishna consciousness under able guidance. And only in the human form of life can you really do an analysis of this contamination. We cannot do an analysis of contamination in an animal life. Right? We said that lust is the mightiest enemy. In only in human form of life, we can understand that this lust is a cause of my all my previous births, right? And is the cause of my human form of life also. And therefore, only in the human form you can strategize to counter this lust. Only in the human form can you find out, okay, my enemy, where is it located now? How can I attack this enemy? Where is it situated? First thing you have to identify is where that enemy is located. Then only you can attack the enemy, right? You have to know, oh, yes, the US planes, should they move over the Afghanistan in the drone plane? Because you know, yes, the terrorist group is operating in this area. You have to locate your enemy to form an attack strategy. Right? So that leads us to the next verse, which is 40. Where is lust located? The senses, the mind and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders it. So this lust, which is situated in the senses, mind and intelligence, it covers the knowledge of the absolute truth. If you go back to 28, please go back to 3.28. What is mentioned there? One who is in knowledge of the absolute truth, O mighty Yam, does not engage himself in the senses and sense gratification, knowing well the differences between work and devotion and working for fruitful results. So that knowledge is very much essential for someone to make that discrimination. And what is mentioned here? Lust covers that knowledge. Lust covers our sense of discrimination. So when one is lusty, then one even forgets that this is my daughter. How can I do it? I'm supposed to be a father, right? I'm supposed to give her protection. Who else will she trust in the world if I do this to her? She'll lose faith in the whole world, right? But the lust is so powerful, it even covers that knowledge. Such a big enemy. So it is that knowledge of, or the science of self-realization, which differentiates whether one is working in the interest of Krishna or one is working against the interest of Krishna. And this lust has captured strategic positions in the body, mind, intelligence and where else? Look at it. It's situated in the senses, it's situated in the mind and it's situated in the intelligence. All strategic positions it has taken. So, the question may come, now where, how to attack this lust? Where to begin, how to attack, and how to overcome its power? Because what is happening is, because it is sitting in this strategic position, it is giving us a complete, it has an impact on our identity. Prabhupada says in this purport that lust gives us false identification also. So, she is saying that there are four levels at which lust attacks. These are all manifestations of lust, Prabhupada is saying. First is identifying the body with the self. I am this body, so therefore all activities I should do any somehow to satisfy this body without discrimination. Like that. That can be a gross or a subtle identification. It can be a subtle identification also. Some people say that I am this body. Some people think in a very subtle way. I am intelligent. I am capable. I am the president of this company. So because I am the president of this company, then I can do anything with my subordinates. No? Oh, after all, you are just a junior programmer who has joined. So what if I touch you inappropriately? How does it matter? Know that I am in power in this company. I am handling so many responsibilities. Actually, people start thinking like that. I remember that there was one girl who was doing a sales and marketing job. So she was given an opportunity. She was told by her company that you have to go with your client to another location, to another place, like that. And as she was traveling in the bus with that client started suddenly touching her inappropriately. Thinking that this is my customer, she is from the customer organization, I am a client organization, so I can hold her hand like that. And then this girl had to tell him, look, sorry, right? So she had to really tell him and then escalate that to the organization. So why? Because this man is now developing an identity that he is the client organization, he is a customer. So this lust comes in various forms and gives you different identities to justify to your mind that what you are doing is correct.
Like that.
So identifying the body with the self. Considering the byproducts which come from this body to be kinsmen. My son, my parents, my relatives, these are all manifestations of lust. Right? Aham mameti. That is why the Lord is saying that verse. He says, Pumsa Sriya Mithuni Bhavametam. He starts with that lust and finally he is ending with what? Janasya Mohoyam Aham Mameti. Me and mine. The genesis of that is lust. Like that. Considering the land of birth to be worshipable. Subcaste, caste, language, state, country, society. All these things. They are all different manifestations of lust. Pilgrimage. Just to go for a bath. Rupa says that is like the bath of asses and, sorry, like the baths of cows. It is like that. So, false identification. Thinking that I am this body. If I go for a pilgrimage and take bath, bodily contamination is gone. Everything is gone. Like that. So many false philosophies also. We get subjugated or we subordinate ourselves to so many false philosophies because of this lust. It has captured such strategic position. So therefore it's very important to know how to attack and overcome it. It's power. That is text 41. Therefore, O Arjuna, solution, best of the Brahmanas, sorry, best of the Bharatas, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of lust. Jada se ukhardo, in Hindi we say. Remove it from the root. O Arjuna, best of the Bharatas, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of sin, lust, by regulating the senses and slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. Lust will destroy knowledge, lust will destroy self-realization. In the very beginning, identify it and remove it. The Lord is saying here.
So, Srila Prabhupada mentioned in the purport
that lust destroys both jnana as well as vijnana. What is the difference between jnana and vijnana?
Knowledge and realized knowledge.
Correct. Knowledge means knowledge and realized knowledge. Jnana is, I am not the body, I am the spirit soul. That is knowledge. Vijnana means what? That I am not only the spirit soul, but I am also eternal servant of Krishna. So, Srila Prabhupada writes very early, self-realization, the science of self-realization book, I think Prabhupada writes. To know God and, sorry, to know one, that one is not the body. So to know what one is not, but also important to know what one is. One is a Jivaya Swarupa Hoy, Krishnaya Nitya Das. So that is self-realization. So this lust destroys both of them. It destroys the knowledge as well as vijnana. So one starts thinking, I am the body and this is, everything is for my enjoyment. So it is a perverted reflection of the love of God. Prabhupada writes in this purport. And then it is mentioned that the senses are the grossest. The senses are the grossest. What is easy to control? The gross or the subtle? The gross, right? So senses are the grossest. So that is why the regulative principles are given to control. That's why Lord Krishna, if you see, is writing in this purport that but regulate the senses, he is saying. First he is saying regulate the senses because that is the grossest. Something which is gross is easier to control. So at least refrain from that activity, even if your mind is telling you. By refraining, then that is one level of, first level of control that one can have. So he's saying senses are the grossest, so senses are the easiest to control, therefore. Therefore, regulate these senses through the process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. That is where the whole Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti and Pancharatrika Vidhi is coming in picture. However, the Lord says, yes, you work on your senses, you do your Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, but do not neglect your intelligence. Do not neglect to control at a subtle level also. First control at a gross level, but do not neglect intelligence. Because, Prabhupada writes in this purport, because this intelligence is just next door guard. The duty of this intelligence is to guard the soul. Like that. And the duty of the intelligence actually is to protect the soul from maya. However, this guard has taken bribe now. A guard who is bribed is not worth. He's not a guard anymore. Right? So this guard is now corrupted and bribed by the enemy of lust. So this intelligence is now covered by lust. So instead of protecting the senses, it's been already bribed. Therefore, do not accept the voice of your intelligence. Because his intelligence is karma. So do not use your intelligence to overcome lust. Instead, use the intelligence of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Because you are dealing with a bribed God right now. Is it clear? So that is the import of this verse. All this is leading up to that final verse, Tadvidhi Pranipatena, which will come in the next chapter. But these are of this, all the background is being made now. First, surrendering to a Guru. Like that.
Only one question. You said you use the intelligence from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra.
Don't use your own intelligence. And in order to use the intelligence from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra,
you need to use your own intelligence. How does it resolve?
No, we don't have to necessarily use our intelligence. We can, even if you are fool number one, we can ask another devotee, and another devotee will still consult Guru in this matter. Like that.
But let's say if we hear...
Of course, there is some use of our intelligence. If you see, actually, there is some use of that intelligence. But that's more use of the free will. Accepting that I am a fool, then making use of the free will to go to Guru, go to the umbrella, to take the shelter of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. There is some discretion you are using. I understand what you are saying. But the free will still has to be exercised under our own intelligence. Yes, that choice we have to still make. So yes, you are right, but Prabhupada's mood here is what? Then don't rely on our own intelligence. Own intelligence means what you are saying is that, for example, somebody may say, okay, I am going to make a New Year resolution that I will never look at any other woman other than my wife. So this is like relying on your own intelligence. Or reading a book which says, you know, how to get, you know, how to overcome attraction to the opposite sex by somebody who is not a devotee at all. I'm saying that, oh, in management philosophy it is mentioned like that, that these things can be done. No? No? Or in the science of morals, it is written, you know, one should look at every woman like she is mother. Okay, fine. I will look everyone like my mother. So all this is fine, but has it succeeded in controlling the problems in this world? No. One has to actually take to the process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. There is no other way actually. That is why Mahaprabhu said, in the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, there is no other way. No other way, no other way. 3 times he has said. There is no other way. The only way of overcoming lust is by Daivi Hesha Gunamai Mama Maya Duratyaya Ma Mevaya Prapadyante Maya Metan Tarantite. This divine energy of mine, Maya, is very difficult to overcome. Not possible. The Lord Himself is saying, don't try. But Mama Maya Duratyaya. But Ma Mevahe Prapadyante, surrender to me, then it is as easy as crossing the water which is contained in the hoof print of a calf. So there is no other way of doing it. So only choice is yes. Some intelligence we use to accept that other devotees are more intelligent than me, more advanced, so I will follow their instruction. That little bit free will is there, yes. Sorry, was there anything else that you wanted?
Sometimes that also covers up, that's the problem.
Yeah, that also covers, yeah.
So that free will, that intelligence to use the intelligence of Guru or Shastra,
yeah,
that is also covered up.
That is
the problem comes here, so
yes.
Then we don't have any option of,
yes,
nothing, relying on anything.
And these problems...
No, and keeping on hearing, no? Then in through hearing you will be reminded that, okay, this problem has come, I should consult Guru Sadhu.
Yeah, that's a very good point, yeah. So we can keep on hearing, therefore. Keeping on hearing, you'll get reminded to do that. Okay. The working senses are superior to dull matter. Mind is higher than the senses. Intelligence is still higher than the mind. And he, the soul, is even higher than the intelligence. So here, Prabhupada is giving a, sorry, Lord Krishna is directly giving a hierarchy, if you like, of who is superior over who. So the hierarchy is what? The lowest is dull matter. No, the lowest is
dull matter.
Higher than that is the working senses. Higher than that is the mind. Higher than the mind is the intelligence. And higher than the intelligence is the soul, which is what all of us are. Because the soul belongs to the superior energy of the Lord, whereas all others belong to the inferior energy of the Lord, because subtle body is also made of matter. It's not made of Satchidananda. Soul is Satchidananda.
So mind and intelligence are matter.
Yeah, they are matter. There is gross matter and then there is subtle matter, but both are matter. One is easily perceived, one is subtler, therefore not perceived directly, experienced.
It's like ether is also being matter.
Pardon?
Ether being matter.
Yeah, they are all matter. They are all coming from the Mahatattva, ether. And the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam gives an elaborate description. What comes from what? No? False ego plus the mode of goodness makes the demigods, blah 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 blah. All that is given here. How ether comes from what? Ultimately, the conclusion is everything comes from sound, which you will come to know when you study that. It's a very analytical study, Sankhya Yoga. Okay.
So, you said these things are subtle matters. Soul was having a pure intelligence, mind,
yes,
property as well.
Yes.
Which way a soul is covered, those properties are covered as well. That, it's not manifested, but the subtle properties have taken over.
Correct, correct. For example, always we give this example. When we do our Bhakti Workshop picnics, you know, for Grihasthas, what we do is, we do what is called as a three-legged race.
Yes.
We tie the feet of the husband and wife like that, and then we told them, now you all run. Like that, okay. So the husband can be, you know, husband may be a, you know, sprint runner, but the wife can't keep pace, or vice versa, right? So each of them have to adjust to each other's pace and run. Of course, the lesson which we are giving them is that in Grihastha Ashram, both have to run together. The husband has to adjust if the wife is slow. The wife, husband is slow, wife has to adjust. Together, they have to reach the destination. It's not about individual excellence in Grihastha life. In Grihastha life, husband and wife are one unit. And child, when a child comes, they are all one unit then. All three have to go at the same pace, like that. So that is one instant, but then another way of looking at it is, when you do a three-legged race, you are retarding the power of the other person. If you were individual, then you would have run much faster, right? So this is how the covering of Maya is. So the soul has got a potency actually for astral travel, but because the soul is trapped inside this body, we forget about astral travel. Even going to that, what is that machine in our house?
Treadmill
also is becoming difficult. To travel, you know, at one place also walking for some time, you know, you start puffing like that. Okay, this is the influence of the body on the soul.
Prabhuji, I have a question then. So, the soul, as you explained, there is, and then there is next door neighbor is intelligence, and then we have the mind. But
yeah.
What so, but the soul in spiritual world, why does it? How is it full of knowledge then? So, without the soul itself,
yeah, soul itself is knowledge.
Soul itself is knowledge.
Yeah.
So it doesn't need any special intelligence or whatever.
It's like a diamond ring. If you cover it, you know, with a black paper,
mm-hmm,
then the diamond is shining. But because of the black paper around it, it's not able to exhibit.
So can we then say that when the soul comes down to this material world, it then gives up its intelligence to a material intelligence?
No. The material intelligence covers. The soul doesn't give up anything. The soul cannot be cut. It's immutable.
But then it feels that it's better to use the material intelligence while we are in the material world, is it? Or
no, it's not good to use the material intelligence when we are in the material world.
But then
if
we do a non-devotee, for example, why doesn't it use its intelligence? Because it's covered.
Which one?
So it is forced to use...
Yeah, the soul is forced to use the material intelligence because it identifies itself with the material intelligence.
Okay.
So, but when the soul gets transcendental knowledge, right? The soul needs transcendental knowledge. So then it remembers that, yes, I shouldn't use this intelligence. I should use intelligence of the Guru, Sadhu and Shastra.
Okay.
And then that is liberating. Something which is binding you, how can that itself liberate you? Isn't it? So you have to go outside, take a loop outside and then come back and get yourself extricated from the incorrect influence of your intelligence. Okay. So, Srila Prabhupada says in this that, of course, it gives the hierarchy of dull matter, working senses, etc., etc., leading to the soul. Then Prabhupada says that simply stopping bodily action does not help because the mind is active. Simply controlling the senses will not help. So even when a person is sleeping, he is dreaming. For example, sometimes what happens in a dream, you know, dream can take us anywhere. It can take us to our teenage years also. And next day when you wake up, you will start missing your old girlfriend. In college, oh, where she is nowadays, no, so much love was there between us, you know, things like that. So these dreams are very, very difficult. The body is sleeping, but the mind is taking back, ages back, like that. No? And when you get up, you sort of, oh my God, I relived my college life. Oh, I'm in Melbourne, huh? Okay. I'm a devotee now, oh, okay, fine, it reminds you. Because then immediately what you do, you wash and then go and start chanting, then you realize, no, your whole life has changed now. So that is a problem. So the mind is still working when the senses are also inactive. And the mind sometimes may make plans also. Now in a dream also one may be enjoying somewhere else, like that, with Bollywood heroine or something like that. Like that, isn't it? So it's very difficult. So simply stopping bodily action is not important. That's why Prabhupada says, better to read a Krishna book before going to bed. So then whatever, you know, then at least in that consciousness, if we go to bed, then we are directly, you know, our mood is different. Like Gopalanesh Prabhu was once telling me, you know, I told him, how to chant attentively, I asked him. He says, whatever you do most of the time, that is what you will do when you are chanting also. Whatever you are thinking most of the time, that is what you will think when you are chanting also. So most of the time, if you are thinking of Krishna, then while chanting also, you will think of Krishna. Like that. So if we are thinking of Krishna before going to bed, then our dreams are less likely to be of Bollywood heroines. Correct? Or ex-flames or whatever. Like that. So, simply stopping bodily action does not help. The mind is active even when dreaming. With intelligence, one has to seek out the soul and engage the mind in Krishna consciousness. The mind has to be engaged. That is the problem. You have to engage the mind in Krishna consciousness. So, a neophyte is advised to keep aloof from the object of the senses. That's another point that is coming across. A neophyte devotee is kept aloof from the object of the senses. A good example is our Bhakta Bhavan. Our Bhakta Bhavan boys are very nicely protected from the various Matajis, especially those who are unmarried in the congregation. And those boys who have disobeyed that instruction have inevitably seen a fall down. And those Matajis also. So the boys will then immediately start seeking out Matajis like that. So Nityanand Prabhu, Priya Prabhu and his team, they are doing a great job with the boys of keeping them in check. And that check is required. It is required in the congregation. Everybody is monitored. Even if a Prabhuji is talking more time with Mataji than pulled up. Haribo, what job is there? Any service is there? Like that. Nothing, then why you are joking and talking like that? No, not required. Not required. Just go about, do your business. Go to Krishna consciousness, do your duty service, come home. Yes, if your body needs rest, sleep. If you have gone for Mangalarti, diet, sleep. After that, get up. Some other devotee will cook breakfast for you. After that, sit and do your studies. After that, go for your job and come back. Again, evening, go and do your service in the temple and come back. Okay, Prabhu, my senses are... No. Okay, no problem. Finish your education, get into a job. We will look for a girl. Devamrita Swami will come, arrange for someone. No problem. Yeah, that is the correct way of going about things. Or Gurujan Prabhu will arrange, or some Maharaj will arrange. Something will come out. A temple president will arrange. Leave it to the authorities and get into a Grihastha Ashram nicely. Then things are stable like that. But initially, they have to be kept away. When they are not mature in Krishna consciousness, you have to forcefully put some restraint. Otherwise, then you know there will be complete chaos. Okay. Prabhu, after all, she is also devotee only, Prabhu. Like that. We were discussing Krishna pastime. All this nonsense. Prabhu, we are thinking we'll read Bhagavatam together with Mataji. Why you want to read with Mataji? You come and read with Prabhu, you know. So much interested in Bhagavatam. Why you read Mataji only for that? Mataji will teach me, you know, some karta how to play. No, he will also teach me. Come. No need. Even in Bombay, they have established base camp. The college boys, His Holiness Radhanath Swami, he has deputed his devotees, disciples, to go out to the colleges. Next to the college itself, they'll rent a room in the building. In that room, they'll put a cook also, one brahmachari cook. His job is to only cook for all the students who are studying in that college, who are interested in bhakti. And ensure that every day they are subjected to Srimad Bhagavatam in the morning, chanting Mangala Arati, Srimad Bhagavatam, then they go to college. Come back, take rest, ensure that they are doing their studies also properly. All that is being done by one caretaker. So that is a model. Then it is safe. And then, yes, if you feel that no, you need a partner, then take Grihastha Ashram and serve Krishna together. Like that. You will get a Krishna conscious child. Like that. So a neophyte is kept aloof. So in the initial stages, one has to be kept aloof. The senses have to be kept away from the object of the senses. But then also, the mind has to be strengthened by the use of intelligence. When the mind is engaged, when the intelligence is purified, the mind is purified by using the intelligence in serving Krishna, then Prabhupada gives the analogy that it is like a serpent whose fangs have been broken. So even then Maya comes, it cannot attack like that. Jaha Krishna, taha nahi mayara adhikar. What is the verse? Krishna haya surya sama, maya haya andhakar. Wherever Lord Krishna is there, then maya doesn't have adhikar in that place. So and then the boys in Bhakta Bhavan are constantly asked to take association of brahmacharis here. So Gopalanda Prabhu will go to Bhakta Bhavan, or the boys will come here, they will have a brahmachari class with Bhaktisar Prabhu or somebody like that. Okay. So the power of association with Lord Krishna and Lord Krishna's devotees, that will purify. This is the last verse now. Thus, knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind and intelligence, O mighty armed Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness, and thus by spiritual strength, one must conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. How can one conquer lust? By spiritual strength only. No other way. No New Year resolutions or anything. No management books. Right? So, Srila Prabhupada reiterates that we have to train the intelligence to fix it in transcendental knowledge to protect us from falling victim to this Rajagun. Otherwise, this Rajagun can take us completely away from Bhakti. And Rajagun has a very nice way of taking. Let's take Grihastha example only. Rajagun is constantly acting on all Grihasthas. It acts on everyone, but I am taking Grihasthas because most of us are Grihasthas here. Except two Matajis. Most are Grihasthas. So Rajagun, for example, how does Rajagun act on us? Because Rajagun then eventually leads to this lust. So this lust has to be covered by controlling that Rajagun itself. Now how do you control Rajagun? What are the various things that one... How does Rajagun makes us take decisions in life? What are some of the challenges that Grihasthas face? Let's take example. Change of job, for example. Prabhu, I am getting more salary in that company. They are asking me to go to, you know, Adelaide and work. They are asking me to go to Timbuktu and work. They are giving me promotion there. I am being recognized there. So that is one. Change of job, change of location, marriage also, that is another decision. Be very careful about mode of passion. For example, you know, I remember when Brihad Bhanu Prabhu was getting married, he got an alliance, you know, and he had called me, you know, we were in India at that time, we were in Pune. So he called me from Melbourne, Prabhu, an alliance has come for me, the girl is from IIM Ahmedabad. Immediately I said, you know, 1 minute. Mother wants someone, father and mother-in-law want someone who will serve them. Now, obviously, there is nothing wrong with IIM Ahmedabad. I have high respect for the institute. It's a world-class management institute. But, however, what is the chance that the girl who is coming out from IIM Ahmedabad will make rotis in-house? Chances are less. I'm not against that college, but chances are less. Because the girl will say that, after all, I also have a career. That's how she will talk at home. Both are, I'm also doing a job. So, why am I supposed to clean the house? You can clean the house. So this kind of discussion is allowed. This is completely contrary to Vedic culture. What is Vedic culture? Wife is happy with the husband's earnings. And husband works responsibly, obviously. Of course, in a situation where this cannot happen, where still, you know, for example, husband loses job or is in a threat of, you know, or having some physical problems, and then there is a threat, then obviously the wife should take up, obviously the family has to run, otherwise Krishna consciousness will stop, right? In that cases it's fine, but not that, you know, okay, wife is looking at her career also is there, Prabhu, that is also important, my career also important, both career, child is roaming around in some childhood class, and I don't, what is that, crush? No, this is not Vedic culture. And then what we are trying to do? We are trying to afford those things which are beyond our karma. Our karma has said you cannot afford. We work hard, right, to be able to afford. And then we say I am tired and Krishna consciousness is very tiring, you know, whatever. So this is called as mode of passion. And once you get used to this, we can't give up. And the mind will then give various suggestions. No, Prabhu, if wife also works, Prabhu, the mortgage can be paid faster and I can retire in Mayapur, Prabhu, earlier. No, it will never happen. It will not happen like that. It will not happen. Because the wife is also not used to sitting in her home. What she is going to do in Mayapur? Correct. He'll say, can I get a job in Calcutta? Yeah, IBM there. It will not work like that. So, this Rajagun has to be controlled. And this Rajagun eventually will lead to that lust. So, we'll discuss more about it in the next class. There are so many other points I want to discuss. But we'll go on because this theme is there now. Lust and transcendental knowledge is going to continue. But we have to be careful that we don't fall too much into this Rajagun, because Rajagun is the genesis of this lust. From there, this lust gradually starts developing. Let's enjoy. Both of us are now earning so much money. First class house, bedroom is there. You know, a nice paint is there, wallpaper is there. The air condition is also blowing. Enjoy. That is the problem. Right? And then we have a right to enjoy, because we have worked so hard to make this money. We have worked so hard to build this house. So let's enjoy in this house. Like that. So that is the genesis. So in this chapter, if you go back, Lord Krishna has glorified transcendental knowledge. He is beginning to glorify transcendental knowledge, which will lift one from the mode of passion and put one in the mode of goodness. And only in this mode of goodness can we actually overcome lust and anger, kama and krodha. And why is he saying all this knowledge? Because he wants us to elevate ourselves from sakama karma yoga to nishkama karma yoga and akama karma. So that is why all this is being spoken. This transcendent knowledge is to lift one from one ladder to the next ladder. So in the next chapter, which is chapter 4, which is called as transcendental knowledge, then Lord Krishna is going to explain more on what is this transcendental knowledge and how this transcendental knowledge should be received, okay, for it to eventually result in a soul overcoming lust and anger. So we will see that in the next week. Any comments or?
What are the verses for next
week? Pardon?
The verses for next
week. The verses for next week. At least do the first 10 verses. I will send a mail tomorrow morning. It will be at least the first 10 verses. But anyway, most of us are not reading. How does it matter? Isn't it? Where is the time? Yeah. Yeah. So, His Grace Burijan Prabhu has written this commentary. Most of you know, I don't have to tell you. But maybe for you heard of this book, Surrender It to Me? Okay. His Grace Burijan Prabhu, who you met recently. So he has written this book called as Surrender Unto Me. This Surrender Unto Me is a commentary by Burijan Prabhu on the Bhagavad Gita. He has also written a commentary on the first four cantos of the first six cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Four cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is called as Unveiling His Lotus Feet. Right? So in this course, it will be extremely useful for all of you from Bhagavad Gita learning point of view as well as examination point of view to study along with Srila Prabhupada's purport, Burijan Prabhu's commentaries. They are very powerful. Personally, I am benefiting quite a lot. Only by reading Srila Prabhupada's book, sometimes I am not able to really understand what Prabhupada is talking. But when Burijan Prabhu's comments, then you really come to understand what Srila Prabhupada is. You get that much more deeper understanding out of those verses. So we encourage, request all of you, please buy these books, right? And it will be really a very good friend for you throughout your life, Burijan Prabhu's books. He has written it in very simple language. Bhagavad Gita made it simple, if you like. Of course, Prabhupada also made it simple, but Prabhupada's disciples are more merciful than Prabhupada, in that sense, on us. So, Radha Krishna Prabhu has very nicely arranged for the copies to be available, not at the cost price. I think they are getting a discounted price, right?
Yeah, discounted price.
Yeah. So please collect your copy today, if possible.
No, I don't have a copy.
You don't have a copy, I'm sorry. So please collect your copy at the earliest.
Next week I will have.
Next week.
I was trying to have it, but I couldn't make it.
So what is the recommended donation? So people come ready with that. Or give your account number, they'll remit to you.
$15. Maybe yeah. I can send my bank account details.
Yeah. Is that easier for everyone? Bank account instead of everyone coming with rupee notes and, no, sorry, not rupee, dollar notes. Yeah? So give your bank account to everyone. When will we?
Get our first essay.
Have you submitted your second essay? When?
Yesterday.
So you'll get your first essay soon. I have given the third essays for the pleasure of all of you. Adrian Prabhu, are you receiving the mails on essays? Okay, who is your self-servant. Yogeshwar Prabhu. He is giving you your essay. So third essay you should have, third set of essays you should have. What about the first and second set? So are, have you been able to work on that?
I think the first set, the second one we've done.
Second one you have done?
Yeah.
Okay. So I have not started marking the papers. It's only today that I cleaned up my Gmail account. I had 2,500 mails, all Facebook and Facebook. I don't do the Facebook business. So somebody is always writing, wants to be friends and all. I don't know what to do over there. So I deleted all of them. So please pardon any offense. But I don't know how to operate Facebook and I don't know why it is required in my life. I don't want to add another dimension. So Keshav Prabhu has told us, stay away from computers. So. Shloka exam and final exam. Shloka exam. Shloka exam can be anytime. Okay, let me answer the easiest question. The final exam will be in the second half of November. Second half of November. Yeah, we are not there. But they can still write the exam.
Huh? Many devotees.
Yeah, that's a good. Then you have the opportunity to take it earlier. That's a joke. So we'll work out something. So it will be approximately that time, not earlier than November. So the first exam will be first 5 chapters, which we intend to complete. So please keep up with your fees. Haribol, please keep up with your fees. For the program. Shloka exam I'll announce next week. Since you are very enthusiastic, we'll bring it forward. Shloka competition is not open. Shila Prabhupada ki.